From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's Monday, the 7th day of December 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, USDA is looking to tweak the crop insurance program to save money. The Chinese have piled up a grain trade deficit. That's a very rare occurrence. And Pioneer is pulling back the launch of its new herbicide-resistant crops. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. Hey, don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. And it all happens right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at 526.5 for the soft red, down 10.25. March 10 cents lower at 548, and the May contract at 561 settled 9.75 lower. In Kansas City, the nearby contract for the hard red at 524.5, down 11.5 cents on the afternoon, and we'll catch the July harvest month in Chicago as well. At 571.5, it was down 9.5 for the soft red. December wheat, or rather December corn futures, were a nickel lower at 368.75. The March at 383.75, down 4.75. May corn at 394.75, 4.25 lower, and the July at 404.25, down 4.5 cents. December futures in the corn pit at 419.75, down 4.75. December oats a penny lower at 242.5. January soybean futures now 10.53, up a dime on the day. March at 10.61, 10.5 cents higher. The May at 10.69, up 11.25. July soybeans in 10.75.75, up 11 cents. And November at 10.46.5, a nickel higher. December bean meal at 321.40. 50 cents higher. December bean oil for the day at 40.31, up 55. From the Mercantile Exchange side of the livestock in Chicago for the CME Group, December live cattle futures 81.12.5, up 12.5 cents. The Feb's there at 83.30, a dime higher. January feeders at 92.85, down 50 cents. The March down 17.5 at 93.95, and December lean hogs at 62.20, a dollar and a nickel higher. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil, January contract on the afternoon. A settlement price there down $1.67 at $73.80. January ethanol, $1.98 and 2 cents, down 0.1 cents. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.94 and 8 cents. That's 2 7 cents lower. Natural gas at $4.99, up 40 3/10 cents. And the heating oil at $2.01 and a tenth, down 1.5 cents. Gold contract at $1,163.40, down $5.40. The Dow at 10,373 is just about 15 points lower, and the U.S. dollar at 75.76 is down 0.14 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. It says a blizzard watch is in effect for Joe Davies, Stevenson, Carroll, and Rock Island counties in northwestern Illinois from Tuesday morning right on through Wednesday afternoon. A winter storm watch is in effect for much of the rest of northern and west central Illinois from various times on Tuesday into Wednesday. The forecast for this evening across the two states says in northwestern and west central Illinois, cloudy, light snow arriving after midnight. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 20 in far northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far south. Our forecast, of course, prepared by meteorologist Ed Kieser with an update from Mike Solem. Tomorrow, they say, in the north, cloudy, snow arriving. In central sections, cloudy, rain arriving with an icy mix in west central Illinois. In the south, cloudy, rain arriving. Highs will range tomorrow from 28 in far northwestern Illinois to 48 in the far south. The extended forecast says blizzard conditions are likely across northwestern Illinois Tuesday night into Wednesday. Heavy rainfall expected across much of Indiana and eastern and southern Illinois Tuesday night. That followed by windy and much colder weather arriving on Wednesday, which should change to rain and light snow and blowing snow.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Monday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, that weather forecast looks really not very kind over the next day and a half to 2 days, maybe a bit longer than that. And this afternoon, we're still looking at numbers from USDA on the 7th day of December for crop production and harvest. What do you think those numbers look like today?
Well, we'll see a little bit more of a jump. I think we were like 79% harvested in corn. I imagine that's going to jump 10% or so. There was some decent headway where elevators were open, and two neighbors are helping neighbors now in some areas try to get some of this crop out in those areas. Pockets still struggling. It's been a challenge. Last week, Illinois was 72% complete. I imagine we're up to 82-85%. Iowa, 87%. Minnesota, 78%. Nebraska, 78%. It's kind of frustrating when, you know, the drying capacity isn't there to get it dried down and get it moved. But we'll eventually work through it. First time in a long time, guys have had to have some crop out with snow falling around it.
Indeed. So what does it mean fundamentally for the marketplace? There were some early on that said, you know, if this is a late harvest and a big one, that tail is going to be pretty harsh on the marketplace. It looks like, at least over the last few days, that's the case. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, you know, as far as snow and winter weather, you know, we'll watch standability. There's going to have to be some reports that we're losing the crop that's out there. But the bearish thing right now is that the crop that's coming to town is being sold. Well, at least a large percentage of it, not all of it, but producers aren't wanting to store this crop that maybe has some condition concerns, so it's being moved, and that's going to keep a lid on the marketplace. Seasonally, we had our up into 1st of December here. Now we'll probably struggle a little bit as we go to year end. I don't see a huge sell-off. Corn is probably the negative side, but beans is the positive side. And bean fundamentals are positive. Bean technicals are positive here short term, so that hopefully take the edge off on the corn selling.
Yeah, how long will they stay positive? I wonder about that with a big crop in South America, or what looks like a big crop in South America. Of course, we were short from them last season, which made the United States really the only game in town. So do beans continue to stay strong right on through the month of March, do you think, when harvest really gets underway in South America? And how much of a problem will it be once that happens?
We kind of felt that the bean market could stay firm into January. After that, I think the trade's really going to be focused on the weather forecast for the Southern Hemisphere. I believe they're 85% planted in Brazil, so they still got a little bit more to go. One thing that's been well publicized is that they planted some earlier variety of beans where beans could be on the world market a little sooner, so we could probably see the hedge pressure or the beans coming to the world market in late February, early March versus the later there compared to past history. But as long as weather persists here and they have some decent weather, they're going to, you know, talk, you know, 64, 65 million metric ton Brazilian crop and even a larger Argentine crop compared to a year ago because they had some dry conditions. So, yes, those beans will come to the world market. Asia will shift their focus to the Southern Hemisphere, but right now we're the only game in town.
Let's deal with the crops, old and new crop, corn, soybeans, and wheat. Let's start with beans at this point. Producers likely, if they've been following most of the advice of the of the analysts have sold all or most all of their old crop soybeans at this point. If they've got any left, do you think that they should go ahead and get rid of that? And then are you marketing any new crop?
Yeah, we feel that need to be 75-80% sold on old beans, and we've got some cash replacements on. We've wore out the puts and call strategies for the last couple of years, but we feel for minimal battle risk, you know, on paper. So if, weather problem does develop in the southern hemisphere, you can play catch up that way, but it's going to take a weather concern in the southern hemisphere for the bean market to go sharply higher, or outside markets really pushing this thing higher. So we like being 75-80% sold on old. New beans, right here's a spot to get started. Scale up. We like using a scale up approach. Put options are awful pricey. There's some spread strategies you can use to cheapen those up that worked last year that will work this coming year, too. So it just depends on your comfort zone. But I know a lot of guys go, what do you mean sell 2010? I still got 2009 and some 2008 left to sell. So, but, yeah, I think you got to look out there because a lot of producers we visit with, they're thinking right now more bean acres due to the conditions of the weather we've seen here over the last 2 months.
All right. So then on corn, we've had corn that has come to market. You say there's a lot of hedge pressure on the last set of corn that's come into the marketplace. Let's make some assumptions. I know that's a problem sometimes, but that we've got bins that are priced. They'll come into the marketplace probably in January, maybe in February. We probably have some unpriced corn there as well, old crop. Let's make an assumption that you've got two types, that's going to go out of condition, and you're pretty sure that's the case, and that you think you can make hold. What do you do with both of those bins?
Anything that you've got that's a concern or a worry, don't mess with it. I just move it and replace it on paper.
Okay.
You know, there's some simple strategies you can use to do that. That way you can watch football and basketball this winter and not mess with it, because if you lose a bin full of corn, that's going to hurt awful bad, so I wouldn't mess with it. Now, if you're comfortable with it, I would look at hedging the July futures. You take your cash bid, July futures are well over $4. There's some carry in the market that says try to store this crop until next summer, because a lot of it's been moved up front here, and so the trade's concerned about getting corn later on this spring, next summer, so for good condition corn, we recommend doing a hedge out of deferreds.
Okay, and finally, and I think this is maybe the easiest one, but I'm not sure. If you've got wheat in the ground, soft red winter wheat, that is, are you going to just let it ride at the moment, waiting for maybe a short supply to come into play as we go into July?
We feel so. Now, there's not going to be any bullish news until we get in the spring,
right,
and see how the green up comes, but we believe the acres aren't there. We feel that we will have some strength as we move into next spring, next summer. The problem is old crop wheat. We've got over 800 million bushels of old crop wheat here in the U.S., and that's the highest inventories we've seen over the last 10 to 12 years. So there's no urgency to run the market up as they shake loose this old crop. But longer term, we feel that if you got wheat in the ground, you've got an ace in your back pocket.
All right. Thanks much.
Very good. Take care.
Mm-hmm. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
If you'd like to hear what Kurt had to say again, you can always do that. You can call this phone number, 217-333-3434. We post an update at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. That's after the opens and after the closes. Here's Dave with the news.
In agricultural news, USDA is proposing to reduce overhead payments in the federally subsidized crop insurance system and to revise risk-sharing terms with insurers to promote coverage in underserved areas. The changes are part of a first draft of a proposed agreement with insurance companies to govern crop insurance. Federal spending on crop insurance has doubled from $2.7 billion in fiscal year 2005, reaching $5.7 billion in fiscal year 2008. In its draft, USDA proposed a lower reimbursement for overhead set at the 10-year average price for major crops and a lower rate of return on equity for insurance companies. It said 12.8% return on equity would be reasonable. Reports from China say that during the first 10 months of this year, the country has run a relatively rare trade deficit in some agricultural products, due in part to declines in corn and rice exports, coupled with increases in wheat and barley imports. That put China's grain trade deficit at $70 million versus a surplus of $30 million for the same period a year ago. DuPont officials say its seed company, Pioneer Hybrid, will not release its Optimum GAT herbicide-resistant corn and soybean seeds as planned. DuPont said that it was pulling back the launch for several reasons. In corn, the company said its GAT hybrids were not meeting yield standards. In soybeans, the delay is, according to the report, due to changes in regulatory policy in key import markets and increasing complexity in managing grain stewardship. A Minnesota woman left paralyzed after she ate a hamburger tainted with E. coli has sued agricultural giant Cargill for $100 million. The suit accuses Cargill, a privately held company that processes and distributes beef, pork, and turkey, of producing the contaminated meat. Stephanie Smith, a 22-year-old dance instructor, was diagnosed with E. coli infection. Smith had kidney failure and seizures that led to a 3-month coma. When she came out of the coma, she underwent 2 years of rehabilitation and is now confined to a wheelchair. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, both programs you can hear anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. There are instructions there for you to download them directly from the website or as a podcast automatically to your computer. It's all at willag.org. There's also a way on the right-hand side of the page for you to subscribe to our free weekend marketing newsletter. Please do visit willag.org. Coming up, GMO or environmentally friendly? A study shows when comparing apples to apples, words make a difference. When asked to compare apples to apples, consumers said they would pay more for locally grown apples than genetically modified apples or GMO apples. But in a second questionnaire, consumers preferred GMO apples. That is, when they were described not as GMO, but as having a reduced environmental impact. The research conducted by University of Illinois economist Michael Mazzocco and a Costana College marketing professor, Nadia Novotarova, demonstrated that product labeling makes a difference when it comes to consumer acceptance. Mazzocco says it's about selling the benefits.
Conveying the benefits of the genetic modification, conveying the benefits of the cloning to something that the consumer can get their arms around. It's tangible, you know. The benefit here is that you're having fewer fungicide sprays around your neighborhood and your waterways, you know, and those sorts of things, in order to enable locally grown apples.
The reality is that apples can be bred to be disease-resistant, so they don't have to be sprayed with fungicides and other chemicals 15 to 20 times per growing season. This attribute gives them reduced environmental impact, and that's a benefit consumers can understand.
If you're going to get any benefit from technology, you're going to have to communicate the benefits of it. Because people aren't willing to pay you for the technology just so they can have another attribute. Because they're taking, in this paper, what it says is there's kind of an equal trade-off. They're willing to put up with the GM technology in exchange for locally produced.
People, says Mike Mazzocco, aren't willing to pay for the technology just so they can have another attribute. There's an equal trade-off. But when you don't call it GMO and instead you communicate, he says, the benefit to, for instance, the environment, it's more than a one-to-one trade-off, and consumers are willing to pay more for it. Looking at the rankings of all the combinations of attributes and the comparison of the weightings of the importance of the various factors, what it boils down to, says the ag economist, is that people will pay more for reduced environmental impact. When you call it a GMO, there are some who will steer away from it, but on average, they're indifferent. They'll trade local for GMO. Consumer preferences and trade-offs for locally grown and genetically modified apples, a conjoint analysis approach, appeared in a 2008 issue of International Food and Agribusiness Management Review. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural cash grain markets. On the line with us from the Andersons right here in Champaign County is Greg Johnson. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You still have producers bringing corn into
it? Oh, my, yes. I think just about every elevator that we know of around the area closed early today, and we weren't too bad this morning as far as truck traffic was concerned, but this afternoon it seems like just about everybody that wants to try to get done ahead of this bad weather seems to be hauling in this afternoon.
Yeah, I talked to your outer office before I got to you, and it sounded like it was awful busy in there. There was a lot of chatter.
Yes, it'd be nice if we can, and people are finishing up every day, but, you know, there's still 15% of the corn that's still out there, and that 15% is going to take a while to get in, especially if this weather materializes as forecasted.
Has it taken a quality hit at all yet?
Not yet. The corn seems to be standing well for the most part, but if we do get 1 or 2 inches of snow and then winds, that can't be good for the crop. We're hoping that we're on the edge of that storm system and don't get a lot of the wind and a lot of the wet weather, but it's going to do some damage somewhere. That's the unfortunate part.
And what's the average moisture content coming in? Still having to dry it?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The corn was doing very well. It got down to 20, 21%, but then it's just stuck there. It in the last 2 weeks, it has not dried a bit. So we're still getting a lot of 20 to 21% moisture corn in right out of the field, and that has to be dried down to 15 in order to either load trains or put it on the ground. So it's just a slow process this fall.
And therein lies the debacle for most elevators and the reason they all close earlier in the day, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. You have to have 15% corn, and you know, space is a little bit of an issue, but the big thing is the dryers. We're just not set up to handle this big of a wet crop.
And so at this point, how much longer do you think you'll still be harvesting and drying corn?
We'll be drying corn for a long time because if we get the piles rained on, that'll have to be dried again. And just the regular corn coming out of the field, there's still 15% of the corn in Illinois that is still in the field. So all that corn will be wet. So we'll be drying corn through the middle of January.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, $3.34. January, $3.54. Next fall, $3.90. Cash beans, $10.38. January, the same. And next fall, $10.06.
And do you expect, and I've got about 10 seconds, basis to hold steady or to drop?
Basis has gotten so bad that it's probably bad enough. And in 10 days when the harvest is over, it'll start picking up, but not until then.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons, located right here in Champaign County. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'll be back in 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. An attorney for former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich says the burglary of computers from his law office shouldn't impact the start of the trial on corruption and other charges. Aaron Goldstein says the missing computers only set them back a few hours in their preparation for the Blagojevich trial. Police have already arrested one person in connection to the burglary, where computers as well as monitors and a safe were stolen, but that charge was for unlawful use of a gun, nothing related to the burglary. Well, Goldstein says it appears as though nothing of a sensitive nature related to the former governor's case was taken from the office. Meanwhile, prosecutors say an upcoming U.S. Supreme Court battle over the type of charges used in the indictment against Blagojevich shouldn't delay his trial, scheduled for start on June 3rd. The controversial law barring officials from depriving government of their honest services is a key part of the Blagojevich indictment. But even if the court finds the law unconstitutional, federal prosecutors say it shouldn't delay the trial. They did, however, say some charges might have to be dropped. They also say that we probably will obtain a fresh indictment against the former governor in late January. A Chicago man accused of scheming to attack a Danish newspaper is now charged with playing a role in the November 2008 terrorist attacks in the Indian city of Mumbai that killed 166 people. Federal prosecutors in Chicago have named David Coleman Headley in a criminal information filed in U.S. District Court today. The prosecutors also charged a man named Abdur Rahman Hashim Syed with playing a role in the planned attack on the newspaper. Syed is a retired major in the Pakistani military. Governor Pat Quinn says President Barack Obama should announce sometime this month whether federal officials have decided to move Guantanamo detainees to Northwestern Illinois' Thompson Correctional Center. The governor believes Thompson is the leading contender among several U.S. facilities federal authorities are considering, but the Democrat has declined to offer a timeline despite a Washington Post report that a handover could come late this winter. Indiana State Police will lay off 42 inspectors from their motor carrier division because of the state's financial problems. The last day of work for those being let go is December 31st. 41 motor carrier inspectors will keep their jobs. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Next week, I will be traveling with the Farm Doc team for the Ag Econ meetings, the summits all across the state of Illinois. And it sounds to me like that's much better than traveling this week. The weather forecast kind of ugly for the state of Illinois and the Middle West, isn't it?
Yeah, especially the next couple of days, and particularly on Wednesday, is a very strong storm system. We'll be moving across the Midwest. Actually, some of the onslaught here of the precipitation really starts tomorrow, and it will be snow across northern sections of the Midwest, rain across the southern areas, and that will turn to all snow. The heaviest zone, though, is going to be in areas of Iowa on through Nebraska, northern Illinois up through Wisconsin, where as much as a 6 to 14 inches of snow along with the that very strong winds will create high drifts and whiteout and basically blizzard conditions across sections of the western and northern Midwest. So that is really the highlight here of the week. And at this time, there doesn't look to be any repeat of that, at least given the early call about conditions next week.
Can you give me any more in-depth detail about this winter storm? You gave us sort of where it was coming, but what are the in-depth details for who's getting the most and exactly exact type locations?
Yeah, well, the main snow line is going to be across areas of southern Kansas, and then it'll track through northern sections of Illinois, particularly in the line from around Quincy to Chicago. The heaviest snow band, getting upwards to 6 inches or more and even over a foot, is going to remain across Iowa and sections of Wisconsin. For central areas of Illinois, it's primarily going to be rain, although it might start off as a mix of sleet and snow and freezing rain as we go into tomorrow. No ice storm is expected here, but a light freezing rain is at least a possibility here before it quickly changes over to rain later on tomorrow. So overall, the eastern section of the Midwest will receive primarily rain. It's the northern and western Midwest that get impacted by this really classic winter blizzard here coming up.
And then once it passes through, and when will that end, and what kind of conditions will happen afterwards?
Yeah, the precip will end across areas of Illinois and Indiana by mid-morning on Wednesday, but we do have very strong winds coming in at the time, so that's going to create still a lot of blowing and drifting snow throughout the day on Wednesday. Then Thursday and Friday, it turned much quieter and drier. However, much colder temperatures will be working their way into the Midwest as well, and so that's the time frame, especially in the snow-covered areas, that could see temperatures down single digits, even some sub-zero readings in the areas with highest snowpack.
Mark, we'll talk with you again next week.
Okay, Todd.
Thank you. Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy. He's located in Chicago, Illinois, in the Boeing Building. Joins us each and every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. You can hear him again anytime you'd like off our website at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.